Hey PopDNA fans, Rhonda here. We are so excited to finally get to share with you this bonus interview with Emrys and Luthien of Girls with Sabers. We had a great chat with them, mostly about some psychological insights into Star Wars characters and a couple of other really interesting topics. So I hope you enjoy.
So today we're joined by a couple of special guests from the podcast Girls with Sabers, Emrys and Luthien.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Great.
Really good. We've been really excited to chat with you. We really love the work that you're doing and really got excited about this opportunity.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Yeah, so if you guys want to just take like a moment to just like tell us about your podcast, tell us about Girls with Sabers, what kind of content people can expect and where we can find it.
Well, Girls with Sabers is mostly on YouTube. We are planning on expanding to other podcast type channels like iTunes, Google Play, but right now you can mostly see us on YouTube. But we do podcasts as well as video essays and video edits. Both Luthien and I have backgrounds in literature, art, music, theater, and psychology. So we look at pop culture, especially literary and film, and analyze what's going on in the subtext, what kind of allusions and references they're making, and do a deep dive analysis into the richer meanings of what's around us in multimedia. Most right now, our videos are all about Star Wars and Reylo, but
yeah.
It's been planned from the beginning to branch off into other literature and movies. And so we are ready to spread our wings and start doing some new sources right now.
Sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. What a cool place to start, you know, like to branch off from everything. Yeah.
So would you say that like, so obviously you're both Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
What we like to ask everyone is about like your first experience that you had with that work. So like your history with Star Wars.
Luthien twin, do you want to start on this one?
Yeah, I'll start. Hi everyone. I'm Luthien.
Hi.
Other half of Girls of Sabers, my wonderful partner is Emrys, who was just speaking about her lovely people. I've always been into, fandoms and that sort of thing. Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Love fantasy dramas, like high fantasy too. Any which way I could get it, I loved it. And for Star Wars, my older brother was really into it, and my mom remembers taking him and said, okay, when my girls are old enough, I'm gonna show it to them. And not that my dad wouldn't, but my dad was working and busy and stuff. And so my mom, I remember going to the video store, like those existed, swear to God, those existed, and we got the VHS of A New Hope and watched it.
Nice.
And I was probably seven or eight. So it was the super, super early 90s.
Yeah.
And yeah, I watched it and I was just mesmerized. And from then on, it was, I would say more than a casual fan, because I just loved watching the trilogy. So like, we'd always have it on. If it was on TV, I'd always stop and watch it.
Yeah.
It was not until later down the road that I started like dabbling in some of the Legends content, because really that's all we had.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And then this thing called The Lord of the Rings happened. I was like, what, Star Wars? I lost my love for Star Wars, but it's just like Lord of the Rings hooked me. Oh, and I was in it. And I mean in it. Holy cow. So, but definitely the sequel trilogy really heightened my awareness again for Star Wars and how awesome it is. And just seeing the love story that was Reylo really kind of like struck me like, man, I wonder if anyone else sees this too. And I saw it in 2015, and then I'm like, oh, I don't have time to go online and do this stuff. And so I'm like, wow, I shipped Reylo, didn't even know that it had a name, didn't even know it was just like a craft of a ship until 2018 or 2017 into 2018. And then when I saw The Last Jedi, I was just like, oh my god. And I went online, and the rest is history. Met Emrys, and talking. We had each other at John Williams is This Generation's Wagner. And so a couple months after we started talking, that was January, I think, December, January of 2017 and 18. She then asks, hey, you want to do something? I got something planned. And I was like, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. I'll freaking do it. I don't care. Like, I'll do it. And Girls with Sabers was started.
I love that.
Yeah. So always a geek.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Me too. Well, and that's like the Lord of the Rings movies. Those were all coming out and really big around the same time as the Star Wars prequels. Yes. I think like it was that same like early 2000s. So that's interesting that there is like that tension between Lord of the Rings and Star Wars fans. Like you had to choose sides.
Right.
Pardon me. Yes. Because the Phantom Menace was, sorry, getting over a cough. 1999, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the Fellowship of the Ring was 2001. And then Attack of the Clones was 2003, 2002, because yeah, what, summer, Revenge then. Of the Sith, but excuse me. So they all swirled around each other. And then, of course, you had Lord of the Rings winning all the Oscars in 2003, uh-huh. And here's Star Wars. As George Lucas. Like, oh, Peter Jackson. Oh, George, if only.
He claims he doesn't care about Oscars. That's what he told Charlie Rose.
Ooh. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, George.
Right.
Deep down, you wanted at least one.
I heard you mention that you, and I've seen your work, that you connect to psychology. Can you tell me kind of how that idea got started? Where you like, I mean, it's obviously so in the material, but what was your kind of on point for that conversation?
Well, I have an English education major. That was my major. And so I had to take a lot of classes on adolescent psychology. And that is Star Wars. It's the journey of adolescence into maturity. So when I was watching Rey and Kylo, I was like, oh, Luthien, we have to talk about this.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so, I haven't studied any of this since my dabble in college. And I'm just like, you're going to take the lead on this one, but I can research like a champ. And it all started. I had taken two classes, but it all like was coming back to me, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then the more I researched about it, I'm just like, holy cow, like this could be a big series. Yeah. And definitely, I mean, we did Rey's psychology, but we really honed in on Kylo/Ben's, and that's still our biggest, I mean, we still have numbers crunching for those series, especially volume 4 and 5 or 3 and 4. That was a really fun series to do.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't even feel like work.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, yeah.
most of that conversation came very organically. We just happened to be having a plan recording, and then we went on into what we call squirrel tangents, like the mm-hmm. dog and like squirrel. And we just started talking about the psychology of Kylo Ren. So most of that podcast was, or those four podcasts, was a 4-hour long discussion that two friends just had.
That's amazing.
And yeah, that's we happened to report.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned that when you're talking about the psychology, you said that you don't use Myers-Briggs so much as you do the Kiersey temperaments.
Yes.
So where do you see, you've talked about Rey and Kylo Ren. Have you talked about any other characters and where they fall into that?
We talked about Luke, because in that temperament sorter series, we saw on Crate a dynamic of two very wounded, very, I would say, both of them are stuck in a period of mental illness, and Luke is just stepping out of his and trying to extend the hand of restoration to the one that he wounded, Ben. So we were talking about how Crate is how an INFP, and how we see Kylo Ren as an INTJ, how they both react while confrontation of a person who sees himself as a victim and one who was the person that was about to victimize another. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Luke has the purest heart, I think, of almost anyone in a Star Wars character. But even the purest idealist, which is what an INFP is, an idealist healer, like the person who longs to do good and to heal society and to heal people. Even those people have darkness in them and have moments of weakness. And that's what it was when Luke pulled out that lightsaber. It was a momentary moment of weakness that was almost instantaneous. Like, he didn't even think it out. It was just a knee-jerk reaction. But he still traumatized his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And so he was going out on Crate as a way of helping his sister, helping the resistance, but also healing that breach and apologizing to his nephew of, I realize I failed you. I realize I wounded you, and I'm sorry. So we did talk about those two, and then we talked about the Reylo issue of what does it look like when an idealist and a rational get together, and they're considered in Kiersey, they're considered the revolutionary couple, because the rational has all the ideas, all the visions, but he needs an idealist to communicate those visions and capture the heart of the people to carry it forward. So why I use Kiersey is it is more based on observations of people's behaviors than it is internalizing. So I find that more helpful than Myers-Briggs. Now, Kiersey was a student of Myers-Briggs. He just felt like observations are more factual data than asking someone to see inside of themselves and you seeing somebody else's insides. I mean, it's just looking at people's, you know, what they say and what they do. And I find that very helpful in terms of analyzing a character. Because if you, no matter if you are analyzing literature or analyzing art or analyzing music, there is psychology baked into all of the arts.
Sure.
Absolutely. So
yeah,
I find Kiersey temperament just like a nice way of dissecting this character. Even when I'm playing them or acting out a role, I will look at the Kiersey temperament as like a blank template of, okay, this might be where the character is.
I really love that about it's just easier to take that kind of data, you know, and then use that to inform. I really love that.
And Kiersey helped me so much Kirstie helped me to understand myself.
Sure.
And it helped me understand people in my family.
Oh my God, yeah, totally.
You know, my dad is an awesome guy, but we have the opposite letters.
Oh, interesting.
And so we both had a hard time understanding each other. And so I read his temperament, and all of a sudden I understood what he was trying to say to me and how I needed to understand him. And that was David Kirstie's book, Please Understand Me. And my perception of him healed. So I am an adamant, passionate follower of Kirstie because of just my own experience.
Sure. So I don't know as much about Kirstie, so I'm kind of just wondering, do the Kirstie temperaments have, like, do they, like, correspond pretty closely with the Myers-Briggs?
They have exact same letters.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Same letters. Okay. It's just, instead of the knee and the fae and that, it's more of the separate functions are singular letters, and then you tie them together of how introvert, extrovert, intuitive, sensory, thinker, feeler, and judger, perceiver, how those mixtures of letters are seen in the behaviors of a person.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm an INFP, then does that mean, like, I definitely have the same, like, Kirstie temperament as all INFPs? Is that how that works? Okay, gotcha.
You know, at, like, Myers-Briggs calls the INFP, I think, the dreamer.
Okay.
Kirstie calls them the idealist healer because he sees them as wanting to heal people. He sees them as wanting to heal themselves and extend it outwards because of all the INFPs he studied. That seemed to be the core mark of their behavior. Kirstie also looks at how people communicate. That's how he assigns. He stresses more the intuitive and sensory because since he's observing actions and what people say, he's looking at, do you communicate more with senses of what you experience, what you think, what you feel, what you like, the concrete ways? Or are you more abstract, you know, ideals, things that you can't touch and see, which is intuitive.
Sure.
So, and that's how he grouped things. He grouped things by NT, which are rationals, intuitive thinkers, NFs, which are intuitive fillers, and then SJ, sensory perceivers, and SJ, which are sensory judgers. So his... He like really emphasized on the N's and the S, you know, how is your main frame of communicating? So I'm sorry if that.
That's really interesting.
That's amazing. Yeah. I just think that opens so many doors in terms of character analysis, you know, that's really exciting.
Yeah. Especially like when two characters are in interaction with each other.
Right.
And seeing that probably illuminates a lot in seeing how that relationship plays out.
A lot of our viewers, because we saw Kylo Ren or, and it's all a matter of opinion. Like none of this is a fact.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Like, it's all analysis. Yeah.
But we pegged Kylo as an INTJ, and a lot of our viewers were like, no, he's an idealist. He's a feeler. He's an NF. And I was like, I think that's been Solo peeking out. I think there were dual personalities, and Kylo Ren was the rational, and Ben Solo was the filler. And they just, that's why he was conflict. He wanted to kill his heart. He wanted to kill his father's heart. So he tried to focus in on the mind so much. I don't know. Luthien, do you remember that debate? Are you there, friend?
I'm here. I barely remember that time in my life. It was I'm not joking. Like that whole series just kind of catapulted us, and we were so locked down into, okay, what do we talk about next in this series? And, but I do remember the comments we were getting, like Emra said, oh, well, he's an idealist and this, this, and that. And, and I had to keep telling Em, like, every comment, like, we just got to make a note, like, pin this comment where it's like, this is the Cursey temperament sorter, and, you know, this is just speculation analysis. Like, we're not pegging him, but we, you know, we also had to say, this is also, we're dealing with technically two different people here. So we're going to see those mannerisms flip-flop back and forth. But yeah, that was also just kind of like this whirlwind time for our channel, and some of it's like really coming in strong, and the others like, where did that go? Like,
yeah, I find it really interesting. So it's, okay, so I have a question. So I don't know, quite a while ago, found like it's kind of an alignment chart with the different Myers-Briggs temperaments and like what Star Wars characters match with all of them, and that had Palpatine as an INTJ as well. So I'm wondering, are all Sith INTJ? Is that like a prerequisite?
There's a quote that I found on a meme that INTJs hear the most. You would make a great supervillain. And it's because they are ruled so much by logic. That's the main function.
They're like masterminds.
Logic, right. Logic and the plan. If people's feelings get in the way of my plan, well, those people can get out of my way. I mean, that's pretty much them. So in science fiction, you see people like the Daleks and Doctor Who, like kill everything that has emotion, everything that's not like, and you have a lot of those villains who are like, it's my master plan. I'm the mastermind. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's even a DreamWorks animated movie. where they're so rational that it's either their plan or nothing, like they are superior. Well, that's a toxic rational. That's a person who has gone to the other side of things. And
the dark side, you might say.
And Kirstie makes that, there's a dark side of every single.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Every single type. But because rationals so love the mind, they can get lost in their own. I mean, their ego and themselves can completely take over. Yeah.
That's interesting to me as well, because my boyfriend is an INTJ. So that's, I'm pretty sure, at least. So
did you say you were an INFP?
I am, yeah.
I'm an INFP too.
High five.
And all my boyfriends have been, that sounds like all of them. I promise I'm not that bad, but all of mine have been INTJs as well. And that's
interesting.
Rationals and idealists have this chemistry with each other. And it's called the great misunderstanding or something, where rationals meet idealists and they hear the abstract. They hear they're intuitive, and they think, oh my goodness, I found another rational. But this person actually has a logic behind her feelings or his feelings and his emotions, and they can help me capture the people. So they see idealists as super rationals. And then the idealist here's the rational, think through and analyze and have a plan. And they're like, oh my gosh, these are super idealists, because they know how to move my plan into action and help people. So it's like they have the same kind of communication, but different motivations. And they can, I really think that there's some strong meaning in that rationals and idealists have a special connection, because we speak the same language.
This is like illuminating my life right now. This makes so much sense.
because I would have these, and probably you have these INTJs who will give you the look of death. and then they'll open their mouths, and then they'll share the most deep, analytical, wise words. And as an idealist, I just start falling for their wisdom and their philosophy. Sure. So when we did that, we see Ray as very much an idealist because we were wondering if she's an XNFP. X stands for ambivert, which means that you can flip from being an introvert, extrovert.
Sure, okay.
And we see her doing that a lot. She can be in solitude, like she was in Jakku, or she can just light up when she sees people. So, but we see that in her, where she is very much a healer. I think she's the same personality as Luke. She's an INFP.
I definitely see that.
She wants to heal people. INFPs and healers in Kersey are called like the princesses or the magicians in fairy tales, where they come in and they just want to save everyone, but they're very impulsive. You see Rey and the Last Jedi in that deleted scene, like she sees the fire on the island and she automatically thinks, you know, I need to go save the day, but actually it's a party. So, you know, you just have I just see that in Rey. Luthien, what do you think?
I agree. She's so impulsive, and you just gave the example that I would have given if you hadn't brought it up. I mean, that whole deleted scene is Luke telling her, you cannot be this impulsive. And,
because you know, he's the same way and he's learned.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's also got that impulsivity has gotten her out of so much trouble.
Right.
Many times before, so it certainly has its advantages, but again, there's that balance of the give and take, and that's, I feel, what Luke was trying to tell her.
Sure, yeah.
And he was also learning a bit of that more himself as well.
I love that, too, because I feel like that's so realistic that, like, an introvert would observe details that then you can use to be spontaneous and just make decisions quickly, you know, it's makes for really interesting action sequences, obviously. I would love to hear more about what you were talking about with the maturation of, like, from child to adulthood, because I'm I specialize in child psychology, so it's kind of my whole life. And I would love to hear more of your thoughts about how characters develop over just the expanse of time we're given with this Star Wars universe. You had any thoughts on that, or if there's like a favorite character you've done that arc with, or
Em and I discussed not in super 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 great detail, but we did discuss the journeys that all the characters, especially the sequel trilogy characters, took in their origins. Ben being subjected to the darkness, even in Leia's womb. So that was even pre-birth.
Sure.
Rey from a very early age, and obviously we found out her origin story, but from a very early age, what little we did know about her, but it was fraught with peril and just abuse and neglect and this, that, the other thing. Finn as well, being stolen and taken from the Stormtrooper program. Phasma, Hux, Paige and Rose being brought up, you know, definitely having a little bit of life, but that was fraught with a bit of tumult in their early childhood. So all these children are products of war and politics. And it really, once you dive into that, it really is interesting to see all of their maturation journeys and the different roads that they took.
Absolutely.
In it. And it's very sad and disheartening.
Yeah.
When you see that, obviously you see Ben's journey and you look at Hux and Phasm, you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Even Poe losing his mother and sister, you know, before he was 18 years old. That's, and you know, we find out his shady past. You know, you look at all this and you're just like, God, I mean, this is the product of war.
Yeah.
And war that's raging on and off for a millennia. I mean, it's just very, very sad to see, but interesting in terms of this, this universe. And again, like I said, I'm just regurgitating it, what paths they all took.
Right. I love that. Yeah. Like, I feel like so much of early childhood psychology has to do with adverse childhood experiences and how those play in to how you grow, even in terms of like bodily, like if you're healthy or not physically. And I think that it's so important that that's interwoven into Star Wars, because those are all things that most of us grapple with, you know? So I just think it's really powerful that such a huge story that has all of that, those years of Expanse took the time to include adverse childhood experiences. I think that's really powerful.
I also think there's some post-traumatic stress disorder that both Kylo and Rey, and I think that was almost a bonding moment to them. Is Kylo has been abused from the womb. By Sidious, you know, Luthien just brought that up, and he was further, I mean, he was, I compared him to a bonsai tree. I mean, Snoke really stunted his growth.
Sure.
And almost made him codependent, longing for acceptance. I mean, that's the whole reason Kylo Ren was born, was this longing for acceptance, and he felt never included. And Rey was on survival mode. She was never even allowed to be a child. It was a daily experience of I have to survive. I read in the visual dictionary that if she did not, I mean, sometimes Ukar Plent would send his men to give her a very violent lesson. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. I guess I'm just appalled by that.
Yeah, right.
And we can't show that in a children's movie, of course, but still, I wish people who called her a Mary Sue would just look at, okay, this is what a movie can't show you, but look at the atmosphere and the environment that this little girl had to live through.
Yeah.
And she can't even remember her parents. And what does it mean to be isolated and abandoned, and how that does carry into your adolescence when you don't know your identity, you look everywhere for it.
Yes.
And I think that's why it's so beautiful, that mirror scene, is what are mirrors and fairy tales. A girl looks in the mirror to find herself. I mean, that's what Milan says.
Yes. So, who is that girl I see?
Or the evil stepmother in Snow White. I mean, she's looking for affirmation. That's why girls take selfies. So she looks in the mirror and she sees but herself. And although that is so hurtful in some ways, that is affirming. Girl, you did it.
Right.
You raised yourself and you survived. And that takes a person of extreme strength and character to get through like that and to keep your heart intact.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think I just, there's so much power to raise character.
Yeah.
We're fans.
Yeah. And even like you were saying, her ability to move past like just that survival mentality, because if you're on that in that mentality, you can't experience relationships with other people, even friendships or anything, because you're stuck just in survival mode. So the fact that she was able to fight out of that is just remarkable and really amazing. We all love her.
Yes.
It's
yes.
something I feel that Rian Johnson really felt and mm-hmm. took to heart. And I just don't think JJ and Chris Terrio understood it.
Okay.
Yeah. especially, we've talked about this too.
Yeah. That could go on a whole other railroad track of just annihilated dumpster fire. But
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Just totally bad. But I will say, you look at Rian Johnson, the way he constructed her outfits, her hair, the way she looked, he literally sent her off in a coffin pod to die and be reborn. He truly understood where her, what, at least for his film, what her journey needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
interesting, yeah.
He got the isolation so much that he puts her in a hut and all she has are this blanket and the clothes she's wearing and the person that she literally in the book, it says she thought, you know, the person she needed is Luke, but he wasn't here. And who is the person that's here for her? The last person she thought, it's Kylo Ren. And he's the one who's there. And he tells her, you're not alone. And she doesn't spit fire back at him. She says, neither are you. And that's bam. That's it.
Love but that. I
truly, truly feel that Rian does still understands Rey. Mm-hmm. Gets the very fiber of who she is and who she needed to become. I think that stayed very surface level for JJ and Chris.
Yeah.
Which is mm-hmm. a shame. And you can say, oh, her hair went back in the three buns because it needs to, you know, with the whole Carrie Fisher Leia thing, you know, it needed continuity and it made shooting scenes better. I'm like, that's fine. That's fine. I get it. I did.
Yeah.
The minute I saw her outfit, I'm like, okay, well, she's in white. Well, she's the goddess. And I could, again, go on a totally different railroad track with this. But the hair, when you look at it, in The Force Awakens, her hair is the three very childlike buns, 1, 2, 3, and they're all separate. When you see her hair in this, they are all connected. It's more refined. It's not
she
as
got bobby pins or something.
Right. So it's a bit more, it's more mature. It's
yeah,
more
sure.
mature. She has hanging down, very mature. I really did feel I wish we could have fleshed this film out more where she had her, even though you could say she had a Leia moment in The Last Jedi with her hair kind of down, but I wish we would have gotten that in The Rise of Skywalker where she has the Leia and the Padme moment of her hair fully being down. Love is expressed. She has found her and comfortable in her womanhood. And, you know, you can say, well, she doesn't need to do all that to find that. It, you know, you'd be correct. But I wish there was more continuity. The prequels were barely even mentioned.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I would have loved to see Rey. It doesn't have to be that you're came from a Palpatine.
Right.
You know, you
yeah.
Palpatine.
Yeah.
Rian saying she was a nobody.
Uh-huh.
It was the most powerful thing she could have heard in that moment.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Many people we heard after the film said, we love Rey from Jakku. We love that she was a nobody because it means mm-hmm. that you don't have to be, you know, powerful, like to have this legacy lineage to be powerful in the Force. And that was
right.
all of Broom Boy stood for. But that's why I love Rey is because all she was the Force's answer
yeah.
to Ben crying out for help. I'm done.
Okay.
I don't even remember what the original question was.
That's fine. but that's such, that was, I agree, like that was such a powerful moment that she comes from nobody. And I think, well, something that Erin and I talked about in our episode was the heroine's journey and how that differs from the hero's journey and that it's more intrinsic and internal. And we felt like The Last Jedi really understood that Rey was on this internal journey, not just the external. And so, yeah, that was like such a powerful moment, I think.
Yeah. What's beautiful about all that is in our, we took Rey and Ben through Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. And we did reference the heroine's journey for Rey and, you know, with Maureen Murdoch. Right, but we really, really felt that being the, well, when we did it, they weren't called the dyad yet, but because they're this dyad.
But we knew there was something, though.
Exactly. Exactly. That their journeys are woven into both. That there were, you know, it's this yin-yang principle of the masculine and the feminine winding around each other and swirling into this, you know, even though it's more, it's the dyad's more profound than that. But that's why people are like, oh no, it's the hero's journey. Oh no, it's the heroine's journey. Well, it's both.
Right.
They're both wrapping around each other to where they're, each character is hitting these points on each circle. You're like, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. That's because it's both. It's both. Yeah. Both Ben and Rey are hitting their points in each circle on feminine and masculine side. That's why they resonated with so many people, men and women. Yeah, I mean, we've had men come out of the woodwork on our channel talking about, oh God, you know, I'm out. I love it. I love Reylo and Ron and Emma. Thursday night going into the theater with a Reylo shirt on. And one of the guys said, oh God, Reylo. And the guy next to him, you know, hits him and goes, just, you know, come on, we're all trash. Like at the end of the day, we're all trash. Like
that was my favorite part of all going to the Rise of Skywalker was that one comment from that guy. I was like, validation.
That's so funny.
Validation. Yeah. But it was fun. It's very fun. Even though Em and I, there were moments we loved at The Rise of Skywalker. There were certainly moments we didn't enjoy. But it's still fun wrapping our minds around their relationship.
Yeah.
And where could it go from here? It's awesome. And what points did they hit on those circles in their own journeys? It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I think they both, not only did the both of them together, but I think Disney definitely underestimated their power together and Ben Solo's power, the power that they'd have with the fans, for good or for bad.
I think there was a lot that was missed, like missed opportunities.
We were kind of talking of, we talked a lot about this in our episode. If there was one major change you could make, what do you think it would be? Like, granted, there are many changes, I think, that could have been made. But if you had one that you could go in and you could do right now, what would it be?
Well, we haven't even talked about this. Well, because we've just been so, like, shell-shocked. So, I mean...
I think I'm completing. I'm sorry, Lucien, do you want to do this?
No, I'm curious as to what you're going to say.
I think that, and a lot of people have said this, Rey went on a sexual awakening in The Last Jedi. And I really wish we could have seen the fulfillment of that. And so the fulfillment is Reylo. I mean, Reylo was the adolescent relationship. Like, Rey was the shy teenage girl looking for identity, and Kylo was the boy who doesn't know how to say to a girl that he loves her without being toxic and manipulative. And so you never saw these two actually mature in that. They just kind of went back into themselves and kind of went back into some of their more adolescent type of behavior. I would have loved to seen a conversation with them where Ben is like, you know, you refused me, you shut the door on me, and I understand why. And I'm going to be a better man, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm a better man. And it's all because of you. That's what Darcy said to Elizabeth. I would have been the same entitled, prideful man if it weren't for you to say to my face, I would not have given a thought of being married to you because you didn't behave like a gentleman. And I would have loved to seen Ray, like Luthien said, with her hair down, because that's the sign of fertility. The woman ready to give herself to love, and said, yes, now that you're a mature man and you are committed and habitually changed, I am ready for that relationship. So the door is now open wide, because now we're both two healthy individuals and we can save the universe, the galaxy together, because we are a power couple and we can show what men and women do when they're working together side by side. That's my major change, which is basically, let's redo the whole movie.
Just redo it and make it Pride and Prejudice. Like go full space Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, it was a major regression from all the journey that we saw through The Last Jedi. It was like, yes. And then just regression in The Rise of Skywalker. It was really disconcerting. Like, really? Like,
yeah.
It's like, what the heck happened? Yeah. There are so many missed opportunities. So it's like, for me, where do I even start? hello, Ben and Lando together. Oh my God. Where did you get that blaster? Because it looked like Lando's, just saying right now.
Toys R Us.
Yeah. Stopped on the way. What I really wish we could have seen was Ben's Henry V moment.
His Prince Hal moment.
Yes, where he comes to his own and he stops being Prince Hal and he becomes who he was born to be, and Henry V, and he throws that saber away, his old life, and he just becomes Ben Solo, his father's son, but yeah, his mother's son, Ben Skywalker Solo. And I feel what we got from Ben Solo was awesome. Wasn't enough. We want him to go to the Resistance and say, hey, I need a lift. Like, we need to get me to Exegol because I need this help save Rey. And this moment where he has the St. Crispin speech where the man, he who fights with me today shall be my brother. And as of right now, let's put the past behind us and let's fight for this galaxy. Like, what happened to that? Like, it's one of the first leaks we heard. And it was talking about Supreme Leader Kylo Ren being a benevolent ruler. And half of the Resistance is like, why the heck are we fighting this guy? Like, this is actually perfect. And then the other is like, oh, you know, we should be listening to Poe Dameron, but, oh, okay. So it's like, where is that internal conflict within the Resistance? We got a little bit of it between Poe and Rey, and then, of course, like, the complete sideline of Rose. But
I'm still angry. Like, really, that's what I'm most angry about, I think.
Even Finn's confrontations with Rose in the film, it felt like a slight. Like, what the heck is with this dialogue? Even the way John Boyega portrayed Finn acting towards Rose in the film irritated me to no end. I'm like, oh, dude, sit down. So anyway, but I wish Ben had those moments where he was literally, he totally had the dice in his hands. Or at one moment, like, Rey always carried them with her because that's carrying the hope that Ben Solo will return. Like, what if Rey had the dice? And when she said, I wanted to take your hand, Ben's hand, and then she places the dice. I wish I could have written this whole freaking thing.
Like, she,
the dice in his hand. So now he's literally holding the dice that was only a projection in The Last Jedi. Like, where am I? Like, give me a pen. Give me a pen. Well, there's really a lot of missed opportunities. I feel a lot of them were with Ben Solo. The fact that we didn't see him the latter half of this film, you know, to see him becoming that Solo, that boy into the man, where, and we got it, like I said, we got it a bit. You know, I can't remember whose edit this is, but it's brilliant. It might have been Rey Kenobi. But she puts that whole sequence of him running onto Exegol to I Need a Hero. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
But really, like, we needed that awesome, like, 80s montage of just him flying the Falcon. And, you know, we got it, but it was just, it wasn't enough. And obviously, how many fans agree that it just wasn't enough and we want more Ben Solo? That's really all they want. You realize that you love Ben Solo more than you love Reylo. Like, I didn't even know that was possible, but oh my God, I love Ben Solo. Ben, I love you, Ben. You love it. You want more of him. So yeah, I definitely.
Yeah.
So then, is Hux Falstaff?
We felt that Poe was Falstaff.
Poe is Falstaff.
Huge video on this.
Oh, where, okay. Ooh, we'll check that out.
Poe was the...
He was Hotspur. Poe was Hotspur.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Poe was Hotspur. Yeah.
And then Snoke was Falstaff.
Okay.
Because I so wanted him to have that Prince Hal of I do, I will, as in I will banish you. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love
Well, that's
that.
Another one, too. Hux just getting completely, like, blown to bits. Like, his whole arc was just snatched and stomped on. I hated that so much. I seriously thought Hux was going to be the mouth of Sidious. Like, forget Ian McDiarmid. Like, I get why you brought him back in. Fine. But it's like, you could have had Hux have this, like, everyone thinks he's this, like, the bastard son of Brendel. No, he's legit probably a Palpatine. He could have, and that's why he hated the Force. But it's like, now he found a scientific way to completely embody the Force. And he's gonna, like, yoink it from Rey and Ben, and he's everything they hate, and he's the mouth of Sidious now, like the mouth of Sauron, and he could totally have this amazing arc, and then what's his face just shot him. I'm just like, you know, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and he had the British accent, which, you know, all Palpatines have British accents, so
the red hair.
Yeah,
and I call even the stuff in the comic is alluding to that there's something going on. Like, the way he looks at Ben in some of the comics, he knows Ben's backstory. He knows who Kylo Ren really is and who his parents are. Like, it could have told, ugh.
We had a long talk about all of our disappointments.
That was kind of a loaded question, friends. I'm sorry.
No, we could go four hours on this. Oh, I'm sure. We could do an entire podcast just on what was wrong with The Rise of Skywalker.
But no, there were good things. There were definitely good things.
Yeah, for sure. So. Yeah.
We're starting to talk about those.
Yes.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely.
And, you know, I also think that, like, over time, it'll kind of settle, and we'll be able to watch the trilogy as a whole, and it maybe won't feel so disjointed if you can kind of see all of it together. At least I hope so.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there were so many emotions. So many. Yeah, yes. It would be interesting
to
watch.
So many feelings.
Yeah.
Rage, heartbreak, sadness, like all in the same second.
Yeah,
it's just really a bombardment.
Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Of course, thank you for having us. And and so glad we were able to make this day happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so great to meet you over Skype, of course. I've been listening to a lot of your content, so it's nice to actually get to chat with you guys. So, yeah, this is great.
Thank you. And we'll have to have our show once we can peg down a date.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so fun. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like talking about Shakespeare and
Pride and Prejudice. Oh, my God.
Shakespeare was one of my emphasis in literature. So,
oh, me too.
Yeah. we can do a whole series on the Hollow Crown.
English degrees. Well, thank you guys so much. Make sure that we'll all make sure to check out Girls with Sabers on YouTube, you said, is your primary way to find you guys.
Yes.
Perfect. Yep. Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a lovely night, everyone.